Christmas, I guess. So this year, we went back to normal horror Christmas movies, and we went with Krampus 2015. Yay!
Boo!
Quick question, because people love this movie, but I think all three of us kind of felt the same way. Has there been a more disappointing sophomore film release from a director that you can think of in recent time?
Yes, The Innkeepers.
See, I actually will defend The Innkeepers. I'll defend The Innkeepers over this. I think.
No. Here's the thing, is that The Innkeepers is a much less watchable movie. And that's saying a fuckload, because Krampus was so painful. But The Innkeepers was so bad because there was no script. They were just riffing for two fucking hours, and you're like, what? And there are no monsters. There's, like, at least with this, there are some cool character creature designs.
Well, so that's where I think is the... Okay, so let's dive into it. One of the things that I read early on is that Michael Dougherty was really pushing to use the 80s Universal logo at the start of the movie, and that request was denied. But the reason that he wanted it to start that way was because he felt like the movie was a throwback to, like, the 80s horror movie. And I feel like I get what he means to an extent, but the big difference is that this leans so hard on CGI for creatures that don't need to be CGI that it, like, bothers me. Because, like, it's probably my least favorite monster in the whole movie, but I would like this so much more if there was more practical effects, like the man-eating Jack-in-the-Box, and less CGI gingerbread man in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because the CGI gingerbread man just make me think of the fucking creatures in Sausage Party. And I didn't even watch that movie. I just watched the previews, you know?
No, I think the movie starts off okay. Like, I actually really like the opening credits of, like, the Black Friday insanity or whatever, the Christmas Eve insanity.
Actually, that's my first note. It says, like, the Christmas slow-mo insanity at the beginning is the best part of the film. It literally, like, that's the worst thing that your film can do is if it climaxes in the first 2 minutes, you know? It's like... Also, it's the worst thing your boyfriend can do.
Oh.
The other thing that I learned was that, and this kind of answers a couple questions, but Universal only greenlit this movie if they would make it a PG-13 film.
That's what killed it.
Yeah, which, like...
No, I don't think so. That's not what killed it, because we literally just discussed PG-13 horror. Like, you can do it, but what this movie's problem is the pacing. It's insufferably slow.
And there's certain things that they could have done now that I think about it. Like, I don't understand why they didn't do it, and it still could have been PG-13. Like, it's that type of movie that when the sister gets killed under the car, like, we just need to see the blood splatter when the car starts
shaking.
Yeah, well,
that's the thing. It's like almost a bloodless movie. Yeah.
Which that's fine. That's not the problem. That is literally
not
the problem with it.
It's not the problem, but it's one of those things where, like, because the first time that jumped out at me is, like, the delivery guy should have been more brutal even by PG-13 standards. Like, he doesn't even look that frozen in the car. Like, it literally just looks like they told the actor, like, stand still. And he just stood there. And then, like, they digitally added some shit when it's like, you know, last year we did Scrooged. And I know Scott didn't like Scrooged, but even in Scrooged, you had the frozen homeless guy in the sewer, and that was like actually upsetting shot of a frozen guy. Like, I just feel like it's a PG-13 movie, but it really, really could be just a PG movie if you're basing it just on, like, the mayhem, because it's all just kind of tame.
Make me not say this over and over again for the rest of this episode, but it could have been done well.
You know? And that's, like, the thing. I
so
want to like this movie. That's the thing that sucks. It's like, I want to like this movie so much, and I've given it... I feel like every year or every other year, I give it a shot, and I'm just like, maybe this will be the year that I watch and see something different. Man. But it's like...
This is my second and last watch, because the first time I watched it, I was so disappointed, because, like... The reason people like this movie is because they love Trick or Treat. Like, that's the reason why they love this movie. They are completely blinded by how good that movie is and how fun it is. And they're like, it's gotta be as good. It has to be as good or else my life has no meaning. It's okay. You can just accept that this is a loss.
I think he works better. Some people work better with budget constraints. And I think that, like, Trick or Treat is such an impressive movie because it was done still fairly cheap. Like, it had a backing to it. I'm not saying that it was, like, you know, we've got actual indie film friends that, you know, have to do with a couple thousand, but like it's different than like a couple million. You know what I mean? Like having to work within like a $500,000 range is a massive difference between having to work with a $1 million budget. I think that when you have all of that money, it also becomes easier to want to throw some bigger names in your movie, but then also feel like, well, you know, let's splurge on some CGI. And it's just not like it just didn't work.
Is he just director or did he write this?
He wrote and directed both this and Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Because I think that's where the issue primarily falls. Is he? It feels like he tried to write a Christmas movie. Like it had like all the formula to like a typical Christmas movie, like the family drama and shit that just didn't work.
The first 30 minutes is like a mixtape of Christmas movies. Because it's got like elements of Home Alone and elements of Christmas Vacation all just like smashed together.
Oh, and they're terrible. Like, the thing is, it's absolutely derivative. And so I feel like the people that like this are making themselves ignore the fact that it's... Maybe it's the warm blanket analogy that we talk about. But it's not the warm blanket for us, you know? Like, I just feel like I love what you're talking about, Matt, with the fact that he works better with a lower budget. Because what I think is that once you get that kind of money, you are dealing with a committee that and producers and, not real producers, but executive producers that are saying, like, why don't you do this? Or why don't you add CGI here? I mean, like, maybe his hands are tied a little bit differently than we think.
Yeah. No, and I think that that's possible. And that's the thing is that, like, we've watched bad movies before. You know what I mean? Like, let's talk about one of our favorites. Like, something like Serial Insane Clown Killer. You know what I mean? Like,
damn it.
There's not a better version of that movie. You know what I mean?
I'm glad that you brought it into my life, though. That's the thing.
But that's the thing with that movie is that, like, what you're watching is the best that they could ever hope for with what they made. And that, like, is kind of fun. You know what I mean? Like, same goes with A Demon Wind or, like, an Uninvited. There's not a better take on what you got from that. But there's something so frustrating about watching a movie that... you know that all of the elements make sense, everything works, it's got a competent director, but it's just not gelling right. And, like, that's almost more, like, it's kind of why, we talked about this briefly before, and I won't dive too deep into it, but it's the same reason why I didn't like the most recent Ghostbusters movie, wasn't that it was a bad movie, but the whole time I was imagining how it could be better. Yeah. And that will pull you right out of a movie if the whole time you're watching, you're just like, man, it'd be so much better if they did this instead, or if they did this instead. And then you're like, you're not even paying attention to the film at that point. Like, you were completely checked out by that point.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It frustrates me how sweet Max's letter is to Santa Claus and how much I relate to him just wanting to have a nice family Christmas.
I was hoping your hatred for this movie would spare us, but it turns out it didn't.
But yeah, I mean, I think that that's the other thing that kind of bugs me with this movie. Yeah, like, is Max's family an asshole? For sure. Does Max deserve to go through all of this because he ripped up a Christmas letter to Santa after getting shit on by everybody? Like,
so here's the thing about that, though, is that I guess that they're trying to say that Krampus is super mean-spirited and there's no, like, real sense of rhyme or reason with why he kills and why he imprisons people forever in a snow globe, which is...
So, yeah. So let's... Hold on a second. Let's stop right there. Because did you know that there are two different interpretations about that ending?
What do you mean?
So, how do you guys interpret the end of the movie? Because Scott said the way that I've always seen the end of this movie.
Yeah, they didn't escape. They're in a snow globe forever.
No. Apparently, and Mike Dougherty... says that he won't say which is the true ending, but hints that he's an optimist at heart, is that what everyone else's interpretation of is that all that means is that Krampus has given them a second chance, but he's keeping a watchful eye on them to make sure that they continue to be good people after the events.
That literally doesn't track at all, because they know that they are stuck. That at the end, it is not an upbeat ending of this movie. It is a downer ending where they're all stuck in the snow globe and they fucking know it.
Well, and here's the other thing. With the happy ending, they have released a Krampus comic book that's supposed to be a tie-in that, in fact, does state that they are perfectly fine and safe and that it was a happy ending. So it's like they're even fucking up the dark ending retrospectively. Like,
but the thing is, the dark ending isn't something that I particularly like about
this
movie.
No, I hated the dark. I mean, we'll mention this briefly because someone emailed us about it, and I gave them the nicest response I could.
Yeah.
But people have asked us if we would ever do Better Watch Out. And, like, it's kind of in the same reason why I'm always hesitant to even do, like, the original Silent Night, Deadly Night for this, is that, like, I enjoy Christmas horror movies to a certain extent, but for the most part, it's like, go goofy, go big, like, don't make me have to, like, be invested in anything. So, like, yeah, something like Elves, or even, like, the Silent Night, Deadly Night sequels that are just so off-the-wall goofy, it's like, whatever. But I don't dig dark ending Christmas movies. It's like, it's why I can't get into Christmas Evil. I mean, the one big exception is that, like, obviously Black Christmas is a fucking masterpiece. Like, the original Black Christmas is so good, but that barely even feels like a Christmas movie at times. It's just a slasher movie with, like, a Christmas aesthetic the whole time.
But that's like saying that Halloween's only a slasher. That's true.
I guess what I mean by that is, like, Black Christmas didn't set the precedent for, like, someone having to be dressed up like Santa Claus, or every way that they're killed to be tied to, like, Christmas. Like, it's like, oh, they're going to stab him with a candy cane. They're going to do that. Like, it very much was just, hey, it's Christmas time, and that's, like, the setup for why these people are, like, slowly leaving school, and why, like, people going missing is going undetected.
But that's also why it's a perfect movie.
Oh, it's so good. It is one of the best slasher films ever made, period, end of sentence. Krampus is, yeah, I think I'm with you, Scott. I don't know if I'm ever going to revisit this again. Like, if we got, like, maybe, who knows, maybe if Mike suddenly was like, hey, surprise, motherfuckers, we did shoot an R-rated version, and here's the director's cut. Like, curiosity.
That's
not
watching the same movie, though, you know?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, curiosity, I'd be like, all right, let's see what this director's cut is. But even Brian has been fooled by a Halloween 6 producer's cut before.
And he's going to hate me in October.
I'm going to hate myself.
Kind of bouncing back to what we were saying, though, about, like, when you watch these movies and you know that there's a better movie, or there could be a better movie. One of the ones that really bugged me is when Max's grandmother is explaining the history of Krampus. And I'm watching it, and it's this CGI flashback. And
it's like paper cutout, right?
Yeah, it's like stop, trying to be stop motion.
I mean, but I don't understand why they made that decision.
No, and I agree, because I was like, this whole scene would be better if they did... If they either went all in on stop motion or did all in on, like, shadow puppet. But, like, they're trying to use CGI to do a blend of both, and it just doesn't work. It doesn't work at all.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, that's the problem with this movie, is that it really feels like they were just trying everything they could to make it interesting. And it's also super weird to have the gingerbread men that are, like, super CGI and then have legit good practical effects in it, because if I was a producer, and this is also my aesthetic talking, but if I was a producer and somebody was like, well, we're gonna do this sweet Jack-in-the-Box that's practical, but we're also gonna do these gingerbread men and they may not look as good, I would probably be like, why do you need the killer gingerbread men? Because, like, in this movie you have so many monsters. You have the owl doll, you have the Jack-in-the-Box, the actual Krampus elves, Krampus itself, the gingerbread men, and you have something else too, I think. I'm blanking a little bit, but, like, that's a lot of shit thrown at the wall. And
you could
get rid of the gingerbread men and it would be fine, because it's not adding anything.
Mm-hmm. It's so frustrating because even the cast is so good. You know what I mean? Like, it's like...
Is it, though? The cast is strong. And Toni Collette couldn't even save this.
Yeah.
What I mean is not like, oh, they casted them for the right parts, but it's like, it's not like they just grabbed a bunch of nobodies who don't know how to do this.
No, no. Well, that's what made the disappointment, like, even more, was knowing the lineup in it. But what I don't get across the board, not even just this movie, I feel like producer, director, anyone, like, now I'm not a filmmaker, so, you know, take what I say with a grain of salt, but, like, I don't care what year it is, we're never going to see the peak of technology. So anytime you rely on CGI, you're basically putting an expiration date on your movie. Like, in 10 years, it's going to look terrible, you know, like, no matter what.
Well, no, here's the caveat to that, because I watched Jurassic Park for the first time in maybe a decade or so this summer. It was like August. And that CGI still holds up, which is crazy, but it's because it was a blend.
That's gotcha. What I mean. That's the big thing, though. It's like, if you're using CGI to enhance a practical, then it's not as noticeable. But when you're just leaning all in on the CGI, that's when it's like, oof, you got nothing. You got no safety net.
Well, and then I also, here's the caveat to the caveat, is the thing prequel that they did in like 2011, I want to say it was, they did all practical, and then committee came in and was like, just put CGI on top of all that practical. And so it's like, even when they do blend it, sometimes it's not the right decision. So,
but I think they almost completely erase, because I watched that thing.
That featurette is so frustrating. Yeah. It is the most frustrating featurette of all time for me.
Because it's almost like they said, erase the practical and replace it with CGI. Like, it wasn't even an enhancement. It was like a Band-Aid or a cover-all.
I don't even know why they did it, because the practical looks so fucking good. But also, the even more frustrating thing about that is that the people that made that movie, the practical effects department, I can't remember the name of the company. Maybe it was Spectral.
Oh, they got shit on by everybody that didn't know the
story.
And
then, because of that, they were like, we're going to make our own quote-unquote thing movie. And they made Harbinger Down. And Harbinger Down is obviously a movie made by practical effects people. Because it sucks. It looks cool as fuck, but the movie is not good.
Well, it's like, there's a certain enjoyment out of, I think it's called Action USA. I still haven't watched it, but I want to watch it. But it's like, it's literally a bunch of stuntmen decided to make an action movie.
Oh, yeah. And I've seen, you know who always posts that shit on Instagram is VCR World. You follow them?
Yeah.
And they're always
the car driving through the house. It's like, this movie is such a mess because, like, best intentions. It was like a group of stuntmen that were like, you know who's going to make a dope ass action movie? A bunch of stuntmen. But you know who can't write a screenplay? A bunch of stuntmen.
Yeah, we should do that for one of our, like, first pick of the year.
Action USA. The big one that I can't believe I haven't picked for a Patreon, and maybe that'll happen in 2021, is fucking Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
God. No, please don't.
I don't even know what that is.
Do we have any other thoughts about Krampus? I feel like we've officially gotten into the let's talk about anything but Krampus portion of the show.
Because it's not only is it not a good movie, but it's not a good movie from someone that like we want to succeed, that made us happy. At one point, so it's like hard to talk about because I don't want to shit on the guy.
We can shit on him all we want, okay?
Yeah,
that's true.
Although I do feel bad. I wonder if he's like just scrolling through the internet and he's like, man, I hope someone's talking about Krampus. And he's like, ooh, horror movie night. They'll be kind.
Yeah. Look at these
not today,
nerds.
Motherfucker.
Yeah, go check out our trick or treat episode from a couple months ago.
Yeah, well, that's the hand job that you need, Michael Party.
All right, so let's talk double features. Who wants to go first? Because this was picked by committee, essentially.
Yeah, this was a committee one. Yeah. Brian, do you have one? I feel like we need to give you the softball here today.
Yeah, surprisingly, I do have one. I would pair this with Saint, also known as Sint.
Sint, yeah.
Never saw it, but I used a lot of clips for an upcoming live stream. It looks ridiculous. Oh, yeah, for a live stream that passed.
Scott, do you want to go? Because I don't think you'll have mine. And if you do, I have a backup.
So I'm pretty sure, and I've been meaning to, I actually had to Google a second time and I did not get the answer that I wanted. But Demonic Toys is a Christmas movie, right?
Demonic Toys is a Halloween movie, but that was
going to
be
Halloween.
But that was one of my double features because this movie feels like it was inspired by Demonic Toys between the Jack in the Box and the baby doll and all of the other shit.
Who would win in a fight? Who would win? Baby Oopsie Daisy or the owl baby doll?
Oh, Baby Oopsie Daisy.
The owl baby doll is all about scaring you. Baby Oopsie Daisy will fuck you up.
And smoke a cigar.
Well, then, since you took Demonic Toys, I'll lean on my plan B, which I'm afraid I don't think I said this already, but maybe I did. But if I did, it's 2 weeks in a row. Silent Night, Deadly Night, Part 5, The Toy Maker.
Oh, God damn it.
I rewatched it as I do every December, and I still, I mean, I really fucking love that movie.
You know what I'm going to watch, because I still have to wrap some Christmas presents for Megan, and so I still have to watch Silent Night, Deadly Night, and Black Christmas. I might try and squeeze in Silent Night, Deadly Night 3, Better Watch Out.
Starring Bill Moseley.
Yeah, but it's been...
1 week since you looked at me.
I think that that's the one that I've watched the longest time ago, because I actually watched Stupid Ass Toy Maker after you picked it for the show, you son of a bitch.
I love that one. I don't know what's wrong with you. The killer toys are delightful in it. Brian, I know that this is usually the question that you don't have an answer for, but have you watched anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, I want to talk about the most ridiculous show in the world.
90 Day Fiancé?
No. It's called Designated.
I literally started watching that this week.
What, 90 Day Fiancé?
No. Yeah, it's a train wreck. It's very depressing.
This is called Designated Survivor. It has got Jack Bauer, Kiefer Sutherland. And it's basically, he is in HUD. He gets chosen as the designated survivor, and the entire, like, the Congress building gets blown up, and everyone in politics is basically dead. So now he's the acting president. But the show is written by cocaine. It is the funniest fucking thing. This is one episode. I'm going to tell you guys the basis for one episode because it's so funny. I've told so many people about this episode. So he gets a call because the head coach of the Olympics team got stopped in Russia and they found a bunch of steroids on him. So now he's in a Russia prison looking at life in prison. But it turns out that he's actually a CIA operative that went undercover in Russia. So now they have to go through all this stuff. They have to pull in these other countries, make a bunch of deals just to get this guy released. They get him released. He doesn't make it on the plane. Then the CIA finds pictures of him walking with the KGB member because he's a double agent. That is one episode. It is
amazing.
Yeah, it's like everything. Everything. It's such a great, dumb show to watch.
All right, so since this is the episode that's coming out right before Christmas, you know, last year and for the 12 months following it, I chalked up Let It Snow as the best new Christmas movie of 2019. Well, 2020's best new Christmas movie is available on Hulu. I've watched it twice already, and it's called The Happiest Season, and it is phenomenal. It is written and directed by Clea DuVall, and it is starring Kristen Stewart, Dan Levy, Alison Brie, Mackenzie Davis. It's a fantastic cast, and it's about a girl who is in a long-term relationship with her girlfriend, and she's going to meet their family for the first time, and she's planning to propose at Christmas. Just as they're about to arrive at her parents' house, her girlfriend looks at her and just says, "I probably should have told you this earlier, but my dad's a conservative senator, and he doesn't know that I'm gay, and he can't know that you're gay either." And it is the awkward Christmas of her trying to deal with that week, but it is so funny, so heartfelt. It is top-notch Christmas dramedy. Highly recommend it for everybody and anybody. Has one of the most powerful speeches about coming out I have ever seen in a movie. So, but boom, that's my recommendation.
Well, and so that's funny that you mention Let Us Know, because that wasn't what I was going to talk about, but I just remembered that Megan and I watched it. I hated it.
Dude, I couldn't get into it either.
No, son of a bitch.
Well, so Matt, like, talked it up so much.
I think
much,
that was
and I was
it.
Like, this is going to be so good. And Megan, you know, Megan was like, "Didn't you say that Matt said this was really good?" I'm like, "Yeah, let's fucking watch it." And I hated every person in it.
Aww.
Every single person. And I was like, this has nothing. This is nothing like Can't Hardly Wait. I do like the two characters, but they're also the sappiest, most stupid, unrealistic characters, which is the pop singer and the girl with the mom who's dying of cancer. But, you know, like, I thought that they were the best actors, and, you know, they were both very attractive, and so that was cool. But, like, the bitchy girl that is treating all of her friends like shit, and she's the one who's with Joan Cusack the whole time, and then she buys her best friend a baby pig, which I think is a really bad decision, just because pigs don't stay small. I love pigs, and they're not pets, you know, like, that's just not how it works. So that really bothered me, and I didn't hate the gay angle. I hated the way that they just made it, like, you know how Matt bitches about Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and says that there are no stakes There are no stakes in Let It Snow.
Like, no, not at all.
She's like, oh, I'm not out. And then all of her friends are cool with it. They're all bitchy cheerleaders. They're not going to be cool with it. It's not... Okay, that movie came out in 2019. That's fine. Not even in 2025 are cheerleaders going to be totally cool with their best friend coming out and be like, yeah, we knew that you were gay when she's closeted. Like, it's just dumb. It's so dumb. But anyway, that's not what I wanted to talk about. So Let Us Know, don't watch Let Us Know. What I wanted to talk about was reading and watching Lovecraft Country. I finished it all. And I liked it, but I was pretty disappointed by the ending of the show. Have either of you guys watched it?
I just watched it recently.
Yeah, the weird thing about it is it's a good show. Like, there's nothing about it that I didn't like, but we fell off watching it, and then I just haven't had the motivation to go back. I just haven't been in the mood to watch it. I don't know what it is. Nothing bad about it. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
It's definitely a show that, let me say it like this. The Mandalorian this season, I feel like, has been a show that has been just increasingly better as every episode comes out.
Mm-hmm. And
this is the total opposite. It started at a peak and just kind of slowly stepped down every episode.
Maybe that's it.
It's true. Yep.
But I think that I will say this, as much as we're shitting on the CGI and how dated it looks in Krampus and 5 years later, every moment that happened in Lovecraft Country that was supposed to make me feel a specific way from like the violence or the gross out standpoint succeeded. Like it definitely tapped into like, and it's funny because Scott, I'm curious to hear what you have to say, because my experience with Lovecraft isn't from reading any of his stuff, but it's from seeing movies that were adapted from it. So as I was watching it, I kept thinking of Necronomicon specifically. Mm-hmm, so like certain elements would come up and I'd be like, oh, that reminds me of like this part in Necronomicon. Like I could feel where the influence was being pulled from in it. Whether you love it or hate it or just feel indifferent about it, the idea of taking such a infamously racist person's mythology and transforming it into like a very important story about racism, like, is awesome. Like, I'm all about that. And that's kind of one of the, you said something on One Hit Thunder about Lit, where you were like, whether I like the album or dislike the album, I'm going to champion it anyway. And that's kind of how I feel about Lovecraft Country, where it's like, I enjoy it, but I will champion the shit out of the show because I like what the show is trying to do.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think the show is like for us. No. You know, like, oh, we can appreciate some layers of it, but it really is like when Black Panther came out, the Afrofuturism angle of it isn't really for us. And that's fine. Like, we can appreciate it and understand it and like learn about Afrofuturism, but it's not really like we're not going to get the same feeling and the same level of understanding out of it as someone who knows about Afrofuturism or people that have experienced racism and they, you know, things like that for Lovecraft Country. So, I mean, the thing that really chaps my hide about Lovecraft Country, the book, first of all, is because I read the, so I watched the first four episodes, stopped because I was stoked about it. And I was like, I need to read the book to see how it lines up. So I read the book and then I went back and finished the series. And the book, first of all, is written by a white guy. And I don't want to gatekeep and say that a white person can't write, you know, about Jim Crow, but it also is something like, I'm like, it's touchy, you know? But the book in particular loses the Lovecraftian vibe a lot for me. And they reference a lot in the show how the book and the show are different. They actually specifically point at things out in, like, later on in the show. Matt, you watched the whole series then?
Yes.
Okay, so when they talk about him getting the copy of Lovecraft Country through the portal, mm-hmm. right? In the book, they're basically saying that George, like that Atticus's son, wrote our copy of Lovecraft Country in a way, because there are multiple Earths and it's like a multiverse kind of thing. But that also is weird because it's revisionism saying that Matt Ruff, a white man, didn't write Lovecraft Country in our Earth. It's a really weird, I just don't know how I feel about that, you know? Like, it's, I have no problem with them changing things for the show, because I also like the fact that they made the show in such a way that it doesn't, it's got a nice bookend for this season, but it's not going to be the last season that they do. So it does kind of take a little bit away from it. I don't know how I feel about a Kamiho being in it. I like the fact that they were saying, like, monsters exist outside of American culture, but, like, a Kamiho doesn't exist in Lovecraft, as far as I know. Them doing, like, multiverse stuff instead of doing space travel like they did in the book, the space travel felt way more Lovecraftian to me than the way that they handled it in the show. But then they had Shoggoths in the show, and they didn't have them in the book. They have a much different kind of deal with the ghosts in the show. I don't know how I feel. I think that they did a good job on using the ghosts in both. But then they had a siren in the show, and I really liked the siren. But then getting to the siren felt like an Indiana Jones kind of thing. And so I don't know how I feel about that. And so it's a very mixed bag of how I feel about the show and the book. I mean, I would recommend the show to anybody. I don't necessarily think I'd recommend the book to just anybody. I feel like you'd have to hardcore love the show to really want to read the book. It was a snappy read. It wasn't hard to read, but just didn't leave me feeling satisfied. Neither of them left me feeling fully satisfied. Like, when I read John Dies at the End, I mean, that book comes to mind as, like, one of those recent horror books where I just felt super, super satisfied when I finished reading it. And I haven't had a lot of horror novels that have come out after that that have made me feel that way. And so maybe I'm just jaded. I don't know.
All right. So that was Krampus. And a bunch of other stuff. Merry Christmas, everybody. Or, you know, I'm going to steal this from Josh because I do love that he says this. Scary Cryptmas, everybody. So that was our Krampus episode. We'll be back next year. We got one more before next year. We'll be back next week with a New Year's Eve movie. Go and hit up all of our social media and our Patreon. And you know what? Go over and also check out our friends at Geekscape.net because, you know, someone on this show might be doing a whole lot of work for them right now. So,
and it's not me or Brian.
No.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.